Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as you would say in Italy, and welcome to those who do not speak Italian. This is the first episode of the Calcioland podcast this week. And yes, I am not David. You are very, very perceptive. I am, of course, Alex Goldberg, and I am joined by a really, really good friend of the show, Claudio Perfetto. And David was nice enough, Claudio, to trust both of us. Hopefully we can repay him with that trust and produce somewhat of a good show here. This show is going to be a little bit centric on Serie A youth, but we are going to do our normal two segments that we do every Monday, which would be winners and losers, where we recap the Serie A weekend. And we will actually get to some Twitter questions, despite the guru David himself not being here to answer them. Claudio is going to step in for David, and Claudio is going to answer some great Twitter questions that we got. But we're really going to follow the typical format of a Calcioland show. We're going to have a top segment here. I'm going to ask you a question, Claudio. We're going to do winners and losers. We'll do Twitter questions. And then, just like usual, we are going to have an interview segment as well, where I interviewed Stephen Ganavas of Scouted Football. So if you're a longtime Calcioland listener, you know who Stephen Ganavas is. He is the head of Scouted Football, which is just an awesome site that focus on the best young players in the world, 23 or under. We talked a lot about Serie A youth, in that interview. So I really think you guys will enjoy it if you're at all into who the next up-and-comers are. But let's start with our top segment here, and it is about Serie A youth. And it's just a question that kind of dawned over me in the last 24 hours as I was honestly preparing for the interview with Steven. I was thinking, all right, well, Juve don't really rely a lot on youth right now, and they don't really need to. Sure, they're not doing great in the Champions League, but it's really hard to argue with the veterans that Allegri chooses. Of course, they have Bentancur, but they just don't have a lot of youth that they rely on. And Napoli have a decent influx, but it really just kind of starts and stops overall with Fabian Ruiz right now. They have a couple other youth players that play here and there, like an Aminu Diawara, but really nobody at the level of a Fabian Ruiz. Inter, it's really kind of all Lautaro Martinez right now or nothing, and for good reason. He certainly is worth being excited about, worth talking about because of the Icardi situation. But for me, Claudio, it really is a race between, and I'm of course talking about the top Serie A clubs, it's a race between who has a better crop of youth right now between Milan and Roma. And once again, when I say youth, it is 23 or under. So Claudio, I'm going to ask you, gun to the head, if you had to choose one crop of youth, who would it be between Milan and Roma? And just to give the listeners, before you answer, a little bit of a breakdown of who we could be talking about. Well, for Milan, Piontek is 23, Franchessi's 22, Paqueta's 21, Cutrone's 21. Of course, Donnarumma is somehow still only 20. And then for Roma, it's Patrick Schick, who's 23, Cristante's 23, Pellegrini's 22, Cengiz Under is 21, Zaniolo's 19, Kluivert's 19. So both of these teams are stacked with young, young talent. But if you had to pick one crop of youth, Claudio, who would it be, Milan or Roma?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Alex. I'm honored to do the podcast and fill in for David, not replace him because he is irreplaceable. But going back to the question, I would pick Milan at this moment. And the reason is you listed pretty much all the players that both teams have. Milan also has Calabria, who has made 59 appearances for the club and has been an essential part of the team. And just like Donnarumma, Kessi, Paqueta, Piontek, Cutrone, these guys are all essential parts of Milan and their battle for fourth place. They're all regular starters, or Cutrone hasn't been starting, but he's been coming off the bench in almost every game. Whereas Roma, even though they might have more talent, you know, Kluivert's potential, Under's potential, Schick's potential, and then Zaniolo obviously has been amazing since he's become a regular for them. The talent might lead you to Roma, but the fact that Milan's players are all regular parts of the starting 11 is the reason why. And you could just see, since Piontek and Paqueta have come in January, the team has been really, really good. They've filled those needs. The Piontek, obviously the striker who scores, it seems, in every single game, if not one goal, you know, maybe even two. Paqueta is the midfielder that they've been missing for a long, long time, just talent-wise, skill-wise, with the ball at his feet, someone who could break down defenses from the central part of the field. So right now, that's why I would give them the edge. Undert, for me, is a very, very interesting player who has shown great, great signs at Roma. He has a little bit of an injury history, though. He hasn't been able to stay completely healthy, which scares me. But those are the reasons why right now I would give them to Milan. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, I think you really broke it down really well. Overall, my answer is the same, and I like the reason that you mentioned. For Milan, it is not just the quality of those said players, and individually, they're all really strong players right now. Frank Kessie's doing really well, scored a goal this weekend. Donnarumma is back to having a top season and really being the keeper that I think many projected him to be. Piontek, it doesn't really matter what kit he's wearing. He's just an absolute gunman, no pun intended, with his celebration. Paqueta, somebody to be really excited about. I mean, we're not even including Bakayoko because he's 24, but all of a sudden, he's kind of looking like maybe the Monaco Bakayoko that a lot of people projected on in a positive way. So the reason really is the reason that you mentioned that I would take Milan. It's they're all proving right now that they can be not just regulars, but maybe the best players on Milan. And just I think the awesome thing about Milan is the fact that it hasn't been a star veteran that has turned their thing around. It has been a influx of youth players and players that necessarily haven't even been at the club very long. I mean, Paqueta coming in, obviously, mid-season. Bakayoko is not there in preseason. Piontek coming in mid-season. I just think it's so impressive that they can be this good already. So if they can be this good already without a preseason, how damn good can they be with a preseason when clearly the team is actually built around them? They're just making it now. They're forcing Gattuso to build the team around them because they're playing that damn well. It wasn't like Gattuso knew this was going to be his plan back in preseason. So it's really impressive. If you were to go with Roma, Claudio, it's definitely heavily dependent on Zaniolo. I mean, Zaniolo, maybe. I wouldn't critique anybody if they had to pick one player out of this crop, as good as all of those players are on Milan, even with a Donnarumma, I can't believe he's still only 20. I wouldn't blame anybody if they chose one player and chose Zaniolo. Just what he's showing at 19 has been tremendous. And he might be even, I mean, it's crazy to say, but I think he's now shown us enough. I know it hasn't been seasons and seasons. I mean, he might be the one where you're just like, yeah, he's got the best potential. But I like that you mentioned Under's injury history, and then with somebody like Kluivert, he's got such a high ceiling, but I also feel like he has a really low floor. I feel like with Kluivert, I've never been too high on him because I think who his dad is does play a role in his value. I also don't think he was one of the best wingers in the Eredivisie last year. So I just think if you take Zaniolo out of the conversation, you're doing a lot more projecting with Roma's youth. So go ahead.
Also, just to interject, with Milan, like you said, Bakayoko, Romagnoli, yes, Suso, Çalhanoğlu, these guys, even though they're not under 23, they're still right in their mid-20s. So the whole core of the team is very young, which makes these players even more important. Because like you said, with Roma, you know, maybe Dzeko is still one of the best players in Manolas, and they have some other guys in Zonzi who are essential to the team and older players. Milan's whole team really is structured around youth. So these guys aren't even relying on more experienced players playing alongside them. They're really stepping up and becoming the core of the team.
Yeah, really good point there, because I have said all season long, and now Roma's doing a little bit better than I thought they would. I actually had them pegged for sixth. They're in fifth right now. But I had said all year long that I didn't love the way Roma had built their team, meaning I thought that if Di Francesco was sacked, it was going to be a little bit unfair on him because I just thought he had a really hard job as a manager. I haven't loved the way the team's been structured for him. As you said, there's older players and then there's really young players. And sometimes it's tough knowing what direction do I go. My veterans are good. They're good. They're not great, but they have a lot of experience. My younger players are good. They're not great yet either, but they could be just as good now and maybe much better long term. Or do I go with a mix? And for me, especially before Zaniolo really broke out, it was really tough to know what directions should Di Francesco go in. And yeah, with Milan, it's just they're building a chemistry too together. So if you're a Milan fan, I mean, you should really, really not just be happy about the short term and what you're doing in the short term and the fact that, you know, I know you're only 1 point ahead of Roma, but it does look like they should finish in a spot for Champions League football, but the long term is starting to look really, really positive for Milan. So, you know, obviously hit us up on Twitter. I think this is just a good conversation to carry on. It's a conversation that might change from this point to next week to the week after that. But hit us up on Twitter and kind of share your thoughts and views on who you would take. You can tweet at us at CalcioLandPod on Twitter. But as I said, Claudio, at the top, we're going to do a normal show here. So we just had a nice slate of Serie A this weekend. And per usual, I'm not going to do winners and losers. I'm going to facilitate winners and losers. Because if you do follow me on Twitter, you know I'm a little bit of a Chelsea nut. And even though I did at least do some homework on the weekend in Serie A, I'd be doing a disservice to our Calcioland listeners if I ran winners and losers. You definitely watched a lot more than I did. So Claudio, without further ado, who are winners and losers of episode 198 of the Calcioland podcast?
So for my first winner, it's kind of a group effort, and we're going to go back to Milan. And the reason why is obviously they had a nice, easy win against Empoli on Friday. And it was a good way for them to start the weekend off, solidifying their place in as the fourth team in Serie A, which is very important for them, as you had mentioned. But on top of that, they had some great signs in the match, like Piątek scoring another goal. Conti, who I was going to make him the winner of the week because he played a full 90 minutes, which is something he hasn't done in over a year. And it's very important for the team to get him back because as good as Calabria has been, Conti adds a different dimension. And maybe, you know, one of them eventually would be able to take Ricardo Rodriguez a spot over on the left because they're both becoming really, really good fullbacks. So that was a big part of the game for them. And of course, Bilia also made a debut after a long injury, and he having him back in the lineup is important for them because Bakayoko, Kessié, Paqueta, you know, they've been playing every game and you don't want them to get worn down. So having Bilia return really gives them another midfield option. You know, he was an essential part of the team before he got hurt. So it's really important for him to return because they could mix and match now in games and maybe play him in some Coppa Italia matches while keeping Bakayoko and Kessié in the Serie A matches or vice versa. So that's my first winner of the week. And then my second winner of the week is Paulo Dybala. The reason why is because Juventus was very lackluster against Bologna. It's been a very bad moment for Juventus. I feel like we haven't had one of these in a long time with the club. And Dybala has been taking a brunt of criticism because his performances maybe have not been great. Allegri benched them a couple of matches. He's been used mainly as a sub. And he came on and made an impact right away, scoring the goal that won the game for Juventus. It's very nice to see because Dybala, to me, is a top talent in football. And it doesn't make any sense for me that a guy that talented starts from the bench or sits out whole games because you would never think of top talents at other clubs like an Mbappe or a Messi or even Ronaldo, you know, getting benched because of form. And I'm not saying that Dybala is in that category. Yeah, he still has a lot of work to do and to prove that he's there, but I definitely think he has the potential to be there. So I'm happy for him that he was able to come and score a goal and make the difference for Juventus in that match. And then losers of the week, I have one loser. It's one game, and it's the Inter-Fiorentina game. Now, obviously, the result was not great for Inter as they tied 3-3, which really dragged them back into the fight for the top four. They had a nice, comfortable lead ahead of fourth spot. They were kind of hanging in that third spot for a long part of the season. Some thought that maybe they would even challenge Napoli for the second spot in Serie A. Now they've been driven back, but the game had a ton of controversy, and the loser in the game in particular for me is VAR. Obviously, there were two penalty decisions that caused a lot of controversy from that match. And for me, VAR, I'm a huge supporter of it. I think it's great for the game. I think it's important for the game, but I think that VAR needs to adapt to a more American sports style of overturning calls where maybe there's one control center and not a particular ref at each match using the VAR. Maybe if the control center, you know, handles everything from start to finish across the whole league, there won't be any inconsistencies because you have one set of people making the decisions over and over again. And really, it has to be an NFL style where the call is either overturned, confirmed, or it just stands. You know, stands means there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it, which I think is a perfectly fine thing. The ref makes a call. VAR can't overturn it because it doesn't have enough evidence to overturn it. So the call just stands. Doesn't mean that it's confirmed. It just means that it stands. So for me, VAR really needs to get its act together because there are many critics of it. And if it keeps going in this direction where there's just so much inconsistency, it really isn't good for the sport because it's not helping the way it should be. It's putting more pressure on the referees and the refereeing system as a whole. So that's my major and only real big loser from the weekend.
All right. Awesome, Claudio. Really well done there. I certainly learned a lot more about the weekend since I was not as well versed as you were. All right. So you're going to be stepping up to the plate again. And yeah, that's not a football reference, but Claudio's fully aware of what sport reference that was. Let's do some Twitter questions. We're not going to do heaps and heaps of Twitter questions, but you are more than qualified to answer these questions, Claudio. So our first question is from someone named Adam on Twitter, and he so kindly asks, with Conti, Andrea Conti, regaining fitness, who would you start in a hypothetical one-game playoff, him or Calabria?
So as I mentioned, with the winners and losers, Conti playing for Milan was a huge part of the weekend for them, and it's a big part of the team. At this point, I would still play Calabria in a one-game playoff. I'm big on Calabria. It might not be a popular opinion. I know he is growing on people, but He's a very solid defensively. He is great in attack, has great pace. Conti obviously has all these things as well. His injury history is the only thing that's been going against him. But in a one-game playoff, I'm still choosing Calabria just because the amount of games he's played for Milan. He's played in huge games for Milan. He's made a difference in big games for Milan. His inconsistency was a little bit of an issue, but lately he seems to be fixing that and has been pretty consistent and playing very, very well. So at this point, Alex, I'm still going to pick Davide Calabria to start over Andrea Conti in a one-game playoff.
All right. Good answer there. Next one, Claudio. This comes from someone named Juventus Armchair Supporters Group on Twitter. And they ask, if Juventus parts company with Allegri, who among Zidane, Antonio Conte, Deschamps, Guardiola, and Jurgen Klopp would be the best fit, assuming they are inclined to a move?
So this is a great question, and I thought about it a lot. It's interesting, too, because Conte and Deschamps actually have history coaching Juventus already, and they obviously both played for Juventus. So I don't see either one of them returning. Maybe Deschamps, because he led them back to Serie A after that one season in Serie B, but then he left the club and has been doing a great job with France, obviously. Conte, I know you're a lover of Conte, Alex, and he's a solid coach, but I think he kind of burned the bridge there with Juventus after he left and all the criticism and the reasons why he left the club, and they've done great without him. So I don't see a return to the club for Conte. My personal pick would be Zidane. Guardiola obviously is also a great choice, but I just think Zidane, with the history of playing at Juventus, that's a big part of it, knowing the club inside and out, being a part of the club, and then also his pedigree in the Champions League, as good as Guardiola has been in the Champions League as well. He really, you know, only won with Barcelona and Bayern. He wasn't able to win. And then also, obviously, with Manchester City, he's yet to win the Champions League. And I think Juventus, there's no hiding at this point that their goal is to win the Champions League. And who better to do that than a manager like Zidane, who has won it over and over again with Real Madrid. And you could kind of see the impact that he had on the club ever since leaving. They, you know, they're starting to get back into form now, but they were off to a really slow start this season. So for me, due to his history with Juventus and his ability to win the Champions League in recent times, I would pick Zinedine Zidane to be the manager if Allegri were to leave.
I would love to see Zidane at Juve, just as a footballing neutral, a Serie A neutral. I think that'd be awesome to see Zidane at Juve. As you said, his history with the club just kind of adds to the allure of wanting to see that move. And then talking about Antonio Conte, yeah, I have my own feelings towards him, but really just because of last season with Chelsea. But I will never deny that Antonio Conte, if given right players, is a damn good manager. So, Claudio, if Inter can keep Skriniar and they already have Godin coming, if they could have a back three of Skriniar, Godin, and De Vrij, who better of a manager to manage that back three than Antonio Conte? So I would kind of love to see Zidane at Juve and Antonio Conte at Inter, of course, if Spalletti were to go. All right, well, this kind of segues perfectly into this next Twitter question, but this is talking about currently. Aside from Juve, does Milan have the best defensive unit in Serie A?
Well, it's another good question, and as good as Milan has been, I can't say that they're definitely the second best defensive unit in Serie A. Napoli has a great defensive unit. Obviously, Koulibaly is still considered, to me, the best defender in the league. Once you have the best defender in the league on your team, I think it's hard to say that any other defense would be better than yours, as strong as Milan is. And then, like you just mentioned, Inter with De Vrij, Skriniar, even Miranda right now, even though he hasn't been a huge part of the team and he receives a lot of criticism, he's still a solid third choice center back. But with Godin coming, even though it's current, you know, you can't help but think that in the future, Inter is going to have a very, very strong defense, especially with depth now, which is a huge thing. Milan, really, Musacchio has been playing well. Zapata has played well, but he's so inconsistent. So really, if you take them out of the equation and you just look at Romagnoli, for me, the whole team has been playing well defensively. But if you're looking specifically at the defensive unit, I don't think that they have enough to easily be considered the second best. I still would put them, I put them in the conversation, but for me, they are slightly behind Napoli and Inter at this time just because of the top, top talent that both of those teams possess defensively.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just funny that Koulibaly is so damn good that if you take Koulibaly off Napoli, all of a sudden their defense is just, it's in shambles in comparison. But sometimes it only takes an elite center back of that level to just catapult your whole entire defense. All right, so last Twitter question comes from a good friend of the show, Majin Tenshi, and he asks, are Roma better off letting Monchi leave at the end of the season, or should they do whatever it takes to hold on to him?
Yeah, I would. It's probably an unpopular opinion right now, but I would hold on to him. I think Roma is really set up for the long term. I think that's what the president wants. It's a more American approach to football. He wants results, but he also wants to build the long-term sustainability of the club. He's trying to build a new stadium for the team. He kind of wants to replicate that Juventus model. And Monchi is a huge part of that. The results have not been great as of yet for Roma, but I mean, I shouldn't even really say that because last year they made it to the semifinals of the Champions League, which is a huge, huge achievement for a team like that. And they're still in the Champions League this year, and they're actually in better shape to make it to the quarterfinals than Juventus is. And they would be the only team left in the only Italian team left in the competition. So he hasn't really done a very, very bad job or even a bad job at all. He's investing in youth. Some players are going to miss. That's just how it is with youth. You're not going to hit on every single youth player that you sign and bring into the club. Some will miss, some will hit. But long term, look at the job he did at Sevilla. Given the tools, given the freedom, given the patience, I think that long term he will be able to bring Roma where they want to go, especially if things are off the field, like a new stadium and all the revenue and income that comes from that happen. So he's a top director in football. He'll have a job, in my opinion, in 10 seconds if Roma were to let him go. So that alone right there for me tells me that they should hang on to him.
All right, great stuff. Claudio, before we get to the interview segment, you will be back with us on Thursday, but here's an opportunity to plug everything you're doing. Just let the listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and what just you're up to in the Serie A world or the football world.
Yeah, so I will be back on Thursday. At the moment, I'm writing for DiMartio, as always, but alongside David. You could find me on Twitter at cperfetto11. That's my Twitter page, and there you can see all of the sites that I write for, including cloudsports.tk. That's usually where I have the most freedom to write my own articles of my own opinions, if you're interested in that. But if you're interested in transfer news, you could follow me for the DiMartio stuff as well. So thanks for having me today. It was a pleasure to join you and try to fill in for David as he's taking a much earned vacation, Alex. It was a great time.
Well said, Claudio. Once again, thank you so much for joining me. And now for you listeners, we have an awesome interview coming out with Stephen Gonzalez of Scouted Football, where we'll really, really take a deep dive into just youth in world football, but certainly we will start with some heavy Serie A youth at the top of the interview. And as Claudio and I both mentioned, we will be back with you on Thursday, and we'll do a normal show on Thursday as well. We'll relay some game picks from Thousand Names and David. We'll just talk about some more Serie A, and we just are really prideful about the fact that no matter who is here doing the show, we can give you Calcioland in its entirety. So once again, thanks so much for listening. Enjoy this interview with Stephen Gonzalez, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. All right, welcome on into the interview part of the podcast. And this is really an interview that I look forward to every year. I feel like we've definitely done it every year. This is at least the third time we're having him on. I should really know the exact number, but I just get so excited for it every time that my brain becomes a little bit cloudy. But without further ado, I tease it at the top. We have Stephen Gonzalez joining us today, who is the head of one of my favorite sites in football, period. If you know me, you know that I am very, very excited about the youth in football, who are kind of the next up-and-comers, who should you be aware of. I'm definitely pretty obnoxious and annoying about it regarding my own club, Chelsea. But I really love following all youth and all of world football, and there really is not a better follow than Stephen Gonzalez specifically, but certainly also his publication, Scouted Football. It's at Scouted FTBL on Twitter. They just came out with their new handbook not too long ago. They're now doing quarterly handbooks, which is great because it's more often content from the guys instead of yearly handbooks. So without further ado, Stephen, thank you so much for joining me on Calcioland.
It's a pleasure as always, Alex.
Awesome. So I'm really, you know, I'm going to spare our Serie A listeners. I'm not going to really talk about Chelsea on this podcast at all. It is so damn hard for me, but hey, there are so many talented young players all over the world, and there are plenty in Serie A to talk about. So we will have no trouble just talking about Serie A, and we will branch out after some Serie A questions to world football and who you were excited to write about in this last handbook. But we got to start with Serie A, and I just figured I'm no rocket scientist. Just a logical way to go about this would be starting at the top of the Serie A table, and everybody listening knows who's atop of the Serie A table. It's Juventus. So we'll talk about the top five teams right now in the Serie A table, just kind of their youth and who to look out for, and just a little bit more specifically on a couple specific players. And then we will kind of talk about maybe some outliers, some teams not in the top five. But Stephen, let's start with Juve. Juve is definitely a team right now, still a veterans. I mean, and it's no problem because they keep winning the Scudetto over and over and over. And yeah, maybe they're not doing great in the Champions League, but it's really hard to second guess the veterans that they do choose consistently, that Allegri chooses. So there's really not a lot of youngsters to talk about on Juve, but there is one who is certainly a very integral part of their team in Bentancur. He played really well yesterday in Juve's 1-0 win. And there's also Moise Kean, who certainly is not getting the action that a Bentancur is getting. But you guys wrote about Bentancur once upon a time in one of your previous handbooks. Are you happy with Bentancur? Do you think he's still ascending to be a top midfielder for Juventus and in Serie A? And also, B, talk to me about Moise Kean. Do you think he's somebody that Allegri values? Do you think he's somebody that Juve fans should still be very excited for?
Yeah, Bentancur is, firstly, you got to take into account the experience that he's already gathered at such a young age, World Cup experience, a lot of big games now for Juve. Still has a long way to go, I think, but obviously Juventus being an older veteran team at some point have to look towards some of those younger players, especially now that they're going to be a bit cash-strapped with the Ronaldo deal heading into future transfer windows. So they've got to put time into Bentancur, and they're really doing that this year. He does have some problems. He can play a bit safe in midfield and not push the game forward. But at the same time, you have to respect the engine, the work rate that he puts in. He's solid defensively. And, you know, he in that midfield with Khedira, Ramsey arriving, Pjanic all getting on age-wise, he's the one that you've got to look forward to as a Juventus fan, seeing prosper and hopefully becoming the real pillar and the real leader in that midfield. As far as King's concerned, it is a bit worrying at his age not getting those minutes because they're quite key. At Hellas Verona, he did pretty well at a poor team, scored a few goals, and it was nice to see him get some experience. But obviously, Allegri wants to keep him around the group, specifically probably to work with Mandzukic, Ronaldo, players that hopefully can put a bit of wisdom into him and hold him in good stead for the future. But it is worrying, the lack of minutes. We saw him come on for a cameo against Bologna a few weeks ago and score. So it'll be nice, hopefully, heading into the latter part of the season with the league probably done quite early. Hopefully he can get a few minutes and maybe a couple of consolation goals for a season mostly spent on the bench.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, when you're 13 points up in the table, it really is a great opportunity, especially if you're still 13 points up a few weeks from now, certainly a month from now, to get Moise Kean minutes, because there's still Serie A minutes and you're really not risking a whole lot. I feel like there's really not much short-term risk, but there's a lot of long-term gains. So a good point there. All right, so let's move to second in the Serie A table. It is Napoli, and they are second comfortably. They're 9 points above Inter. And I would say that, you know, I'm obviously very familiar with Napoli's former manager, Maurizio Sarri, and there's been a lot of talk about how he treats the youth, if it's a rotation issue or if it's also a youth issue. I know a big gripe of Napoli fans last year was his rotation issue, but it also could have been interpreted as a youth issue because some of those players on the bench were younger players. But this year, I would say that Ancelotti has done a good job at least playing a few more youth players, but obviously they have a new midfielder who is a youth player who David loves on the show, I love on the show, you guys wrote about. It's Fabian Ruiz. He has certainly been an integral part of Napoli's team this season. So talk to me just about Napoli's youth players, whichever ones kind of stick out to you. Fabian Ruiz is certainly the one that I think sticks out to most people, but they also have Amadou Diarra and Alex Murray in net. Would you just say Fabian Ruiz is leaps and bounds ahead of those guys in terms of who to really hit your wagons to? And just overall, what do you think of Napoli's youth?
Yeah, at this point, you have to be obviously biggest on Fabian. He's come in and it was the perfect signing to replace Jorginho. He can really play that metronomic role, keeping things ticking in the middle of the park, but probably offers a little bit more terms of going forward and being a little bit more dynamic possibly than Jorginho was. But also we shouldn't sleep on Diawara. He's not getting the minutes and the opportunities over the last 12 months or so, but a couple of years ago everyone was very high on him, and I still only 21, and there's still a lot of opportunity to put time into him. It's kind of difficult considering he plays the role that Jorginho was playing. Now Fabian's come in and slotted straight into. So that's going to make things difficult. There was talk of him leaving, but you'd want a big offer if you were Napoli to let him go. Going forward, I really like Unas. I think he's another one that is worth putting time to, especially as this season comes to a conclusion and they probably be assured of Champions League position fairly early, you would assume, although they're also getting dragged back into the mix quietly. But they're not as young as they seem. A couple of years ago, they were very young, and a lot of those players have either left or sliding into the early stages of their prime. Meret hasn't got a lot of minutes this season, and that's really about it. I was going to say Zielinski, but even he's now 24 and a great player, but not quite in the young player range that we focus on.
Yeah, he has graduated that age of 23 and under. He's now 24. But yeah, I certainly Fabian Ruiz, I think, was just better, one of the better flat out signings in Serie A. And it's great to have, it's always great to just acquire a younger player. He's 22 years old who can help now, and he's somebody you can definitely project for the future. So that was just a great get by Napoli. Pretty much everybody we've had on the podcast has had just glowing things to say about Fabian Ruiz. All right, so third in the Serie A table is Inter Milan. Now, with Inter, we're just really going to talk about one player here. Obviously, there's been so much drama with Mauro Icardi. Right now, he's just not in the side. And the replacement is somebody that was getting minutes regardless of the Icardi situation, but now is the full-fledged starter, considering Icardi is not starting, and that is Lautaro Martinez. What is your opinion on Lautaro Martinez? 21 years old. Is he good enough in your eyes where no matter really what happens with Icardi, they can kind of say, all right, whether we're going to sell Icardi or we're just going to have Icardi not play, whatever it is, we're comfortable enough with having Lautaro Martinez as our starting striker. Do you think he is good enough to take that reign? Because Inter obviously are trying to become a top club again, and looks like next year, if they can hold on to Skriniar, they're going to have a really damn good back three with Godin, Skriniar, and De Vrij. So do you think Lautaro Martinez can more than handle being Inter's starting striker?
Yeah, I think at this stage, they kind of got a bank on him now. I think he's capable of. He's got that killer in him, that dog a little bit. I think the Icardi situation is just getting a bit out of hand now, and it's turning into a bit of a circus. And at what point do you continue on? And at the same time, as great of a player as Icardi is, I'm not sure if he's that one that you center your team around and focus everything on, and whether he really gets you over the top as good of a goal scorer as he is. So if you can bank the money from selling him for 100 million euros or whatever you can get from him, and then look to improve, especially in midfield and out wide, then you're a more balanced team. I think Martinez can do a few different things better than Icardi does outside of the box. Just a slightly more dynamic player. But at the same time, if you put the eggs into the Lautaro Martinez basket, you've got to run with it and give it a chance for a while and let him go and put everything into it. So you've got the risk there where you could probably destroy a season next season if that doesn't go right, unless you've got a competent player that will be willing to go come in as a backup, but then if something's going wrong, can take the reins and then put the team on their shoulders as well. So it's a difficult proposition finding a player that you'd be able to bring in for cheap that is a veteran and could come in and fill the role if anything happened. But yeah, I think the situation with Icardi is just becoming a bit untenable.
Yeah, I would agree. And there's definitely risk in obviously hitching your wagons to Lautaro Martinez, putting all the eggs, as you said, in that basket. But I think toxicity is really not necessary. And yeah, Icardi's a great player, but Inter really are trying to have continuity. They're trying to really build something where all the players and the fans can get behind it. And, you know, I think it's worth it to keep Skriniar at all costs. Obviously, I think it's worth it regardless of what happens with Icardi, but really keep Skriniar, have that back three that I mentioned next year of Godin, who's coming over, Godin, Skriniar, De Vrij, maybe the rumors of Antonio Conte managing Inter become true. Who better, and this is coming from me, who better to manage a back three like that than Antonio Conte? And that's considering that I was none too pleased with Conte last year, but I admit he'd be great for that. He knows the league as well. And then I feel like if Lautaro Martinez maybe doesn't reach expectations, you still have a little bit of solidity to fall back on. And I totally agree with you. It is, though, tough finding a backup striker who's a veteran but can still be serviceable that is willing to understand, yeah, Martinez is the guy, I'm the backup, yeah, if he gets injured or something, I'll come in and be the starter. But it's a lot easier said than done saying, oh, I just need to find a backup for Martinez now that Icardi's gone.
I was thinking of someone like Quagliarella, but he's playing too well this season to want to be a backup anywhere, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I could offer Giroud from Chelsea, but I just don't know if he'd have enough left. I'm not too sure about that. But yeah, I agree with you on Martinez. I personally would commit to him, but there definitely is risk in doing that and just saying goodbye to Icardi. So, all right. Milan is the team right now in Serie A that is just, they've almost found just newfound hope and belief. They had a nice win at the weekend over Empoli, winning 3-0. And it just feels like, and I'm jealous because my club, Chelsea, has been a circus and there's been a lot of dysfunction and there's been a lot of toxicity within the club. I'm kind of jealous of what Milan's got going on, which is crazy to say. If I had said that a year back, I would have been like, what? Because Milan was really just not Milan, still kind of a joke. But Milan has found new chemistry with just a few players in the mix. Of course, Piontek, who's just been killing it all year in Serie A, but Bakayoko has certainly surprised me and many Chelsea fans, but even Milan fans didn't start great with Milan when he got there. And then Franchessi's playing well, and of course, Paqueta has really given the midfield new life. So, you know, I just listed off, a handful of youngsters, but then of course, there's Donnarumma, who you guys have written about. Now, Donnarumma a few seasons ago was fantastic. Last season wasn't as good, but in my opinion and in David's opinion, he's been much, much better this season. So what do you think of Milan's crop of youth from Paqueta to Piontek to Donnarumma? Do you really think this is a good core of youth Milan can just continue moving forward with?
Yeah, they're a bit of a good news story since the turn of the year, Milan. What a difference two signings make. Bakayoko had been good and since the turn of the year, he's turned it on as well. But the duo that have come in, Paqueta, is just such a gun. Yeah. You kind of think of him as a attacking-minded player, but he's so delightfully well-rounded, dribbles well, tackles well, is efficient, scores, assists, does everything you want. You start to dream of Kaká. You don't want to get ahead of yourself, but he's already making you think like that. Piontek has come in and just showing again just what he was doing at Genoa, just knows where the goals are, scores at a ridiculously high rate, probably overperforming in terms of the kind of shots he's getting, but still, even if his rate drops a little bit, you'd still be more than happy with it from a 23-year-old striker in his first season in the league and his first season in a outside of Poland. Bakayoko is getting a bit older now, but yeah, again, he's just been turning it on. And Donnarumma, it's so good to see, because he was quite awful last season. It's good to see him starting to get back to the old levels when he was 17, 18. He's just turned 20 yesterday when you're in Australia. And it kind of feels like he should be turning 27, 28 now. He's been around that long.
Yeah. Yeah, they just... Sometimes it really does just take an influx of a few players to give the club, give the manager, give the players, the veterans around those young players kind of something else to fight for, whether it's their job or just they almost feel like, well, if the young kids are doing it, you know, we can step it up. But it's really been awesome to see what Milan has done with some surprising players, as we said, in Bakayoko, and then a new acquisition in Paqueta. And it's not easy for players like that to come in without the preseason either. That's another thing that's really impressive to me, and I think Gattuso also deserves a lot of credit for that, is a lot of these players were not there in preseason and just maybe got ramped up as the season went on. No, a lot of these players came in and all of a sudden became very important players for Milan. So, you know,
but Paqueta is even harder because he just played a full season,
right?
And now he's got another half season to go. It's crazy.
Great point. And so, Gattuso definitely deserves credit for that. And as do the players. And, you know, I famously on this show have not hitched my allegiance to any one team in Serie A, but if there's just one team that I want to root for right now, it's Milan. Not only are they good for football, they're just good in general to be back at the top, but I just think they're a fun team to watch right now, and I'm really happy for Milan and their fans. All right, so the last specific team we're going to talk about is Roma, another team with a lot of youth, and I had said at the beginning of the year that I thought Di Francesco really had a challenging job because I feel like Roma is built really inconsistently. There's a lot of older players, and then there's a lot of younger players. And it can really kind of be a headache for a manager to decide, all right, what direction am I going to go with? All youth, all veterans, or a little bit of a mix? And I feel very differently about some of the young players. Now, of course, everybody's cup of tea right now is Nicolò Zaniolo, who's just been phenomenal for Roma. Finally, even FIFA is taking notice, EA Sports, of course, and just everybody is taking notice. He's been ridiculous, but he admittedly kind of more came out of nowhere when you look at someone like Pellegrini, who's been on the map now for a little bit, someone like Cengiz Under, someone like Justin Kluivert. But let's focus right now just for this first question. What are your thoughts about Zaniolo? Is he as good as he really looks, or do you think this is maybe a honeymoon phase, if you will, and maybe he'll calm down, or do you really think he's legit?
The hype is real. The hype is real. He's a monster. He kind of has a little bit of Paul Pogba about him. He's got the height, that strength that at 19 he really shouldn't have, but he's really physically strong on the ball and has that nice little bit of dribbling skill, just the slight deft touches that he's fantastic. And then he seems like a big game player, scoring in Champions League knockout games. And it's just going to be interesting now to see where he really fits into the midfield, whether they go with him more as a ball carrying eight kind of player, which he can play, or whether they just get him as close to goal as possible and just focus on him as a player for the big moments. Kind of hard. You want the consistent influence of someone like him, but then you also want someone close to goal that's capable of a magical moment that in a big Champions League game might get you over the line. But yeah, he's fantastic, and he looks maybe the Azzurri talent to watch, the one that'll lead the team to the next World Cup if they can qualify this time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. He really is kind of a double positive if you're an Italian Roma fan, which a lot of are. See, you got somebody who can possibly lead your club back to glory and your country back to glory. He really is tremendous. I do like the Paul Pogba comparison. I don't think it's that ridiculous at all, just because, as you said, the size, yet the ability with his feet to do things that you really see from wingers. And he also just has some crazy strength, and it's ridiculous. He's only 19 years old. All right, so I want to talk about two other Roma youngsters, and they're both wingers. And one is Cengiz Under, who is 21 years old and having a decent season at Roma right now. 3 goals, 5 assists in league. And then the other one is Justin Kluivert, who is 2 years younger, 19 years old, of course, came from Ajax last season. Now, I'm on record saying I think Justin Kluivert is a little bit overrated. But when comparing the players, if you had to pick one winger for Roma, would you pick Under or Kluivert? And I will say, I know Kluivert does have age on his side.
Yeah, I'd probably stick with Under, just because he seems like one of those wingers that is capable of producing a decently high level of output in terms of goals and assists, which for me, I think is one of the most important attributes for a modern winger. I know Kluivert likes to stick a little bit wider, and he has scored a lot of goals during his time at Ajax, but I think he's still adapting, especially physically, to the league, whereas Under's kind of managed quite well. He seems to bounce off players and has the ability to fall down and get up straight away and chase after the ball. And so I think that's going to hold him in good stead going forward. I'd say Kluivert probably has the highest ceiling, but I think Under's much more of a sure thing.
Yeah, that's where I gravitate towards as well, because it's not like 21 is old. And, you know, Under is still plenty young. He now has some pretty good experience in Serie A. And I've never wanted to just say that I think Justin Kluivert is crap. I certainly don't think he's crap. I mean, he was really good last year for Ajax. But my thing is, okay, well, we know who his father is, and I mean, no one can tell me otherwise that some of his status, some of the allure to Justin Kluivert is, could he be as good as his father? So, and that's going to happen in every sport. I mean, every sport. If your dad was successful, or maybe even your brother was successful, but certainly if your dad was successful and you're good enough to be a professional, you are going to get more eyes on you and maybe more dollars thrown at you just because of who your family member was. And then also, I just feel like because the Eredivisie does profile talent so well these days, I just feel that Kluivert scored some golazos last year for Ajax. Like he had, I think it was a hat trick that was just incredible. And I feel like it's those games where maybe it overinflates your value. And I could argue that David Neres, even though he hasn't been as good this year, was just as good as Kluivert last year, if not better. And he was also on Ajax. And then you have Lozano, and you just have a lot of talented players in the Eredivisie. I just didn't think Kluivert was one of the best wingers in the Eredivisie last year. But certainly, I mean, there's still plenty of room for Kluivert to fill out. All right, so that's the top five teams right now in Serie A. We definitely did talk about some good youngsters on those teams. But I'm just going to kind of group this all into one question. And I'm not doing it to slight Lazio, who normally is kind of included in that top six conversation. But right now on the table, that would really be rude to Torino, Atalanta, even Sampdoria and Fiorentina to a certain extent. So with just any of the rest of the Serie A teams, it could even be a much lower team. Who are some youngsters that you think are kind of worthy of getting into this podcast interview?
At Fiorentina, I definitely think Nikola Milenkovic is a really, really talented player, versatile, can play at centre back and right back. Looked really superb at the World Cup. Barella, of course, you will all have heard a lot about him, continues to improve, and I think he'll get his move finally this summer, although you'd have to ask David, the transfer guru, of course. Kwame's been fantastic, and I'm not sure, again, what's going on with his transfer, but it looks like he'll end up at Juventus somehow, if I am correct. One that's really stuck out as well is Joachim Andersson at Sampdoria at centre-back. Looks like a real nice player to keep an eye on for the rest of the season, and he could be another one that moves on at the end of the season.
Yeah, those are all really good shouts. What do you think, while we're on the topic, because I know you guys did write about him once, what would you say about Lafont of Fiorentina? Is he a keeper that, in your eyes, is going to hit, you know, top goalkeeper heights?
Yeah, he's kind of made some weird mistakes this season, which he didn't really make while he's in France. But again, still young, I think 21 maybe. Definitely one to persevere with. If you've put a season into a young goalkeeper like him, it's not, he hasn't been disastrous enough for you to give up on your investment. He's still a fantastic shot stopper. Still projected really highly amongst young goalkeepers. So yeah, it's definitely no reason to jump off him at any point. Persevere if you're Fiorentina and hope that he continues to improve next season.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's still just 20 years old. A lot of projectability there. All right, let's move away from Serie A, but we still might be talking about some of the same characters. This podcast, we often focus on the Azzurri as well. It's just been really nice. We haven't had an international break in a while, so naturally we've just been talking about Serie A, but we all know the Azzurri missed out on the World Cup. They need to get back to Italy's standard of being in all these competitions and doing well. Now, ever since the Azzurri were last together and playing, Zaniolo has really erupted, so I assume he is definitely part of your answer here. But how are you feeling right now about the Azzurri's youth? And when I say youth, we're going to follow your model at Scouted Football, 23 or younger. How are you feeling about that crop of young talent?
Yeah, I think you have to be pretty positive about what the future looked like compared to about 18 months ago. Daniel has come through, obviously, Barella. There seems to be a nice core that's being established, Cutrone. Then the defense, if Rugani can get it together eventually and be what people thought he was going to be 3-4 years ago, to go with Romagnoli and Caldara, you've got the spine and Donnarumma, obviously, in goals out wide with Bernardeschi and Chiesa there, and then Andrea Conti out wide on the right or at right back. The options are finally starting to emerge where they weren't so evident 18 months ago when Italy lost to Sweden. So I think if you know, five or six of those can really kick on in the next 3 years, then hopefully, as a half Italian myself, then hopefully the Azzurri can qualify for the next World Cup.
Yeah, I really think their midfield looks damn good all of a sudden. I'm projecting a little bit, but just having a Zaniolo and a Barella and who knows, even maybe a Tonali down the line, I think all of a sudden, I'm kind of passionate now about the Azzurri's youth. I definitely like to think of what clubs have the best youth, but it's always exciting to me to think about maybe what country is starting to have maybe a new crop of youth. I'm definitely high on England's youth. I've been high on the Netherlands youth to a certain extent. Maybe that's all because of Matthias de Ligt and Frankie de Jong, but I do like thinking in those terms. Obviously, France is just littered with it, but I really think Italy is ascending in the right direction, which is really pop. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. And the under-19 team made the final of the Euro last year as well and lost to Portugal 3-2 in the final. But there's a few other players in there. Balanova, the guy that Milan sent out to Bordeaux. There's a few options there also to keep a look at. Tonali was in that team. Zaniolo was in that team. Gianluca Scamacca, a few others. And the under-17 team also made the final of the under-17 Euro and lost to the Netherlands on penalties and had a few nice little plays in there as well.
See, this is why we love you, Stephen. You have this type of info for us, which is, I do like to keep track of those youth leagues, but I can only go so far. So that's really important information. It really is, actually. That's definitely something you can be happy about if you are a fan of the Azzurri. So, all right, now let's branch out from Serie A because, there is youth all over the world, talented youth all over the world, and who knows, they're not in Serie A now, but maybe they'll be coming to a Serie A team. So it is always good to focus at the end of these interviews on just the overall youth right now, 23 and under players that really should catch our attention if they haven't already. So this last handbook came out not too long ago, and I just want to ask you, who are some of the players that either you were excited to put in the handbook, you were excited to write about, or just some of the players that maybe you like that aren't big names yet, but you feel like people should start knowing about them now?
Yeah, the first one, I'm sure any Juventus fans that saw Paratici's note left in the Milan restaurant would have seen the name Dominic Szoboszlai. Apologies for the pronunciation. It's likely wrong. But he's a Hungarian midfielder at Salzburg who looks quite nice, although I think he wrote 10 million euros on his little piece of paper. Paratici, I think it's going to cost a little bit more than that. Looking further down, there's so many. Luka Jovic, everyone probably has heard a little bit about him, scoring bucket loads at Eintracht Frankfurt in Germany. He has a bit like Piątek, just come in and just knows where the goal is, all types of finishes, gets the job done week in, week out. And then looking forward to the quarter coming up, we just finalized about 2 hours ago the list we're going to go with for that one. We're going to have Sandro Tonali in that as well. Milan were linked with Diage Samaseku, also from Salzburg, in January, I believe, and in the summer past. So he'll be one that we'll profile in the next book that will be worth looking out for. And a few young English ones, young English players that you'll be excited about, Alex. We've got Reece James in there.
Yes.
Juan Bissaka is going to be in there. Vinicius Jr. He's not English, obviously, but he's going to be in there. So yeah, a lot to look forward to.
Oh, man. I've been so good focusing just on Serie A in this podcast, but you say someone like Reece James and it really distracts me. But actually, I want to ask you one follow-up on a player you mentioned, and I guess it does have ties to Chelsea being very loosely rumored to want this player. But just in general, everybody's always looking for a striker. If you don't have a star striker, you're always at least remotely looking for one. Do you think Luka Jovic can handle, he's at Frankfurt right now, do you think he can handle a move in the summer to a top club?
Yeah, he's only what, 21 now, but he's been around the block. Started off in his native Serbia, then moved out to Benfica, where it didn't quite work out. If any of the listeners are FM fans, they will know him from his time when he just moved to Benfica. Even before then, he's been a big FM player for a long time. But he's been doing it fairly consistently this season. And I think his game would translate quite well. Looks a real, real good player, but he's going to be, quite the, expensive acquisition, I think, for any team looking his way.
Yeah. I think you're 1,000% correct. Striker is just always that position where maybe at this time of year, you'll hear just a few teams rumored for the player, but then it just feels like there's only a few teams that have their striker situation settled. And even teams that have a decent starting striker are all of a sudden interested in that young striker. So I think Jovic is certainly going to have a lot of potential suitors. Okay, so last question before I ask you about your handbook specifically or just scouted football specifically. If you were a young player, and we've asked you this question, I think every time you've been on, but at least once or twice. If you were a young player, and when I say young player, I'm not going to say 23 now. Let's say a teen, okay? Because I think if people know me or just are following maybe some storylines in England, you kind of know what I'm specifically talking about. If you were a young player, a teen, so 19 or below, and you had all of these eyes on you, you were definitely a top-rated youngster, and you were playing for maybe a top club, but you weren't getting a lot of minutes. And, oh, man, I can just hear the Hudson-Odoi people. Everybody listening is like, Hudson-Odoi. But no, seriously, this is more than just Hudson-Odoi. What league would you want to go to, maybe on loan or just an outright transfer? But where do you think, what league would give you the best chance to really strut your stuff, get out of the lock and get out of the prison of maybe that club you're at? And where do you think would be the best place to showcase your stuff to then leapfrog to make your real big move after that?
Yeah, I think in the past I've answered this question with Ligue 1 and the Eredivisie, but this time I'm going to go Germany. I think it offers both things that those leagues do in terms of goal friendly, especially for attacking and midfield players, opportunities, of course, because that's the key element in the development of young players. But I think the thing the Bundesliga really offers is the way they market their players. They put everything into marketing their players, marketing their teams. And you see how much especially English media have been over in Germany this season, interviewing, covering those players. They've got a brand, and in that brand, if you're a player, is turning into more money, more endorsements, all those kind of things that if you're a player, important. You've got a career, and you want to make a living and financially secure yourself. So I think going to Germany by far above the other two at the moment offers you the best opportunity to do that. While really not getting much less of an opportunity than what those other two leagues offer. So if you think you've got the talent to start, then I'd be banking you in. If you want to go to a league, go to the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I just hope Callum Hudson-Odoi isn't listening. I think it's a great answer. It's just, it feels like, and I don't blame Jadon Sancho, but it just feels like Jadon Sancho has become the pioneer for that. And my whole stance, and I'm not going to spiel on this too long, but my whole stance was for any Chelsea fan blaming Hudson-Odoi for wanting to go to Bayern Munich, and maybe things are now changing, but slowly. Listen, he's got peers that I know, Steven, he played with at England youth level, who, and he was rated really right with a Jadon Sancho or a Reece Nelson. And all of a sudden they're over in the Bundesliga, especially Jadon Sancho being a huge figure for the club. I mean, a huge figure for the club, as you said, being marketed as well, but playing ahead of a Christian Pulisic, immediately being an important player. And Hudson-Odoi is not playing and just looking at his buddy like, oh, what the heck? I want that chance. So I think a lot of the times it has less to do with him not loving the club, him not appreciating Chelsea, and just him appreciating and caring about his future just a little bit more. And, you know, you can call me a Hudson-Odoi fanboy all day, but I just feel like it's really easy to sit where we're sitting and say, oh, no, you got to love the club first. You got to put yourself before the club first. But if you're in that position, you have no idea. If you're not in that position, you have no idea how you would think. And you probably would want to go apply your trade and take a little bit more ownership over your career. And I think the German league, as you said, the Bundesliga is the hot spot for that right now.
For Hudson-Odoi as well, it's not just that Bayern want him. Is that Robin and Ruby are starting to tick on in the age bracket.
Yep.
And there's going to be some big opportunities for minutes if he ends up moving there. So it's a double-edged sword in that case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, fans don't think about details that might be offered. But, you know, there were rumors that they were willing to give him the number 10 shirt, or they were willing to give him a certain amount of starts. And just that type of thing is alluring to a younger player. It's alluring to any player, but it's just stuff that I guess fans don't think about. They think about it kind of black and white, and it's like, oh, no, like, whatever. Bayern Munich's really good. You really think you're going to get minutes there? They're not thinking about all the details. So that is certainly another subject for another day, though, and if I have you on maybe my YouTube channel, Steven, we can dive into more of that stuff. But I absolutely would be upset if I didn't ask you specifically about Scouted Football and about your new handbook. And I'll include it all in one question. But A, why did you now choose to not do a yearly handbook and to do more quarterly handbooks? And then also, how do you divvy up who's going to write about who? Because the one thing I really need to say, if you guys haven't listening, checked out the handbooks from Scouted Football. They're not just like, oh, yeah, we like Zaniolo. We like this person. We like that person. They are so in-depth. You guys really do your homework. I mean, you can learn so much about a player's strength, weaknesses, the outlook, what they already have done just by reading your profiles on the players. So it's not just this laissez-faire like, yeah, I'm just going to write about Clivert or whatever. You guys really do your homework. So A, why did you choose to now do quarterly handbooks instead? And B, how the heck do you divvy up who's going to write about who?
Yeah, so the move to the quarterly was kind of for two reasons. Firstly, we all work full time now. The main guys running, putting together the book, including myself. So it mainly became a workload issue trying to at the deadline get our last 2018 handbook. We did 114 profiles all put together and dropped on the same day. And it's really, really difficult stat checking and editing and putting together 114 profiles. So we decided to divvy it up into four quarters, 25 profiles a quarter. And it also made it a lot more manageable because we decided to take this edition to a print run for the first time. So it just made the whole thing easier. Much less stressful. And then dividing up the profiles, we have a few guys that we know specialize in different things. So it's pretty easy. We put the names down that we want in. We say who would be most familiar with them. And that's pretty much it. Just we have our experts in different leagues and different nationalities. And then wherever there's a bit of a left of field player that none of us are really comfortable with, someone will jump in and go the extra mile and get it done, do the research, watch some games and put something together.
Oh, awesome. I mean, you guys really, I mean, Steven, you've known for a while. I've just been obsessed about Scouted Football, obsessed about what you guys do. And I just have so much respect for all of the homework you put into it all of the time, because there are people, and I can speak from experience, there are people who take your handbook and either just read it all straight through, which, yeah, even when you had all those profiles, that it seems daunting, but it really wasn't. Or they design their FIFA Ultimate teams after some of your handbooks. And I guess I'm literally just talking about myself, but I'm sure others do it. They'll either see, okay, you know, we got all these players from this league, I'm going to get them or whatever, or just there are a lot of people who look for your handbook for a variety of different reasons. I mean, I'm sure there are players that are even like, yes, I'm in the scouted football handbook. So really, just keep up what you're doing. I can't wait that now 4 times a year I'll get a new publication from you guys. So once again, Steven, thank you so much for joining me on Calchaland. I know David appreciates it too. We'll look forward to the next one. But for now, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.